ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the UI Breakfast Podcast. I'm your host, Jane Portman, and we have a very special episode today. My guest is Claire Sullentrop, the founder of Love Your Customer, and also my co-founder, alongside with Benedict Diker, on the new product we're building, which is called UserList.io. And today we're going to talk about our process for doing customer research and initial product development for it. This episode is brought to you by your productized consulting guide. Want to get started with productized consulting? This book will teach you step by step how to craft your offer, overcome client objections, write your sales page, and strategically plan your services line. To get your copy, head over to uibreakfast.com/productized and use your special promo code podcast20 on checkout to get 20% off any book package. Hey, Claire.
Hey, Jane. You can't see me over here, but I am smiling so wide just from hearing you officially say that we are co-founders on this project.
Oh, that's wonderful. Thank you for making the time and thank you for finding some spare time and joining us today.
Absolutely.
Right. So we decided to do like a two-ways interview. In the first part, I will share how we actually came up with the idea for the product. And the second part, I will ask Claire how she did her amazing customer research, transcribed it, and came up with, you know, some product insight. How does it sound?
That's good with me. I'm ready to jump in.
Wonderful. And actually, Claire was on our podcast maybe half a year ago, and I'm going to drop the link in the show notes in case you want to learn more about her personally. But she's an amazing marketer. Maybe, Claire, you could give a few sentences about yourself first.
Sure, I'm happy to. So, yeah, you're right, Jane, that I was on a previous episode of the podcast. I remember when you first reached out to me to schedule that one. I was so excited. So I initially got into SaaS and SaaS marketing when I joined Calendly as their director of marketing. And that was back in 2014. I was with Calendly, wow, for quite a while. We grew the product from I joined in when the product was in beta, and I helped lead the transition from beta to a paid SaaS product. So we went from a couple thousand users to hundreds of thousands of monthly users. And the team, while I was there, grew from the founder and myself up to about our team was, I believe, in the 30s when I left, about 30 people. So the product and the company saw tremendous growth. But I reached a point at which I could either continue my journey with Calendly and expand the marketing team, or I could start something of my own, which has always been more interesting to me in the long run. So Calendly was a wonderful experience, but I knew it was time to kind of start my own venture, whatever that would be. And so at the beginning of last year, so that was January 2017, I struck out on my own, beginning really as a SaaS marketing consultant. And that's been an entire year in figuring out what value I can bring to the table for SaaS companies, how I can position myself in a way that, you know, makes me stand out from any other marketer. So it's been a year of incredible growth and really fun projects and personal discovery and working with all kinds of really cool clients. I'm happy to kind of share a bit about that. And maybe that will come up when we talk about customer research. But toward the end of this year, and this will also be part of the story later on, but toward the end of this year, last year now, I started thinking through, you know, what did I want to do beyond consulting, right? In addition to simply serving one client after another, how else did I want to expand my reach? And UserList kind of came into the picture at a perfect time, which is how I've gotten involved with you, Jane, and with Benedict. So I think that kind of takes us very, very quickly through my SaaS journey. And again, I can dive back into some pieces of that. But that's what's led me to be on this podcast again today.
I'm going to share my piece of the story, how I met you first place. So it was early 2017. I was working on my previous SaaS product, Tiny Reminder, and I got an amazing piece of feedback from someone who kindly recorded a whole video snippet of you know, their personal walkthrough, my product. That couldn't be really more amazing than that. But then I Googled your name and learned that you were previously the director of marketing at Calendly, which was my role model for, you know, the viral growth of Tiny Reminder, potentially. And I was just like, I was wow. And ever since, I've been really admiring what you do online when you're on your own. Your, you know, the brand, love your customers, website, your book as well. And I was really thrilled to have you as a guest. So it's when the time came to find a marketing co-founder, there was no person number one but you, especially.
That's incredibly flattering.
So going back to user list, my previous product, Tiny Reminder, is now happily acquired by my friends from Nusi. And there were a few roadblocks that I hit I'm now taking into consideration with this new product. One of the roadblocks was that I'm not the most spectacular person at marketing. Another roadblock was that it's really hard to market in a new product category. Mm-hmm. When you have to explain, when the level of awareness is really low, you have to explain what the product does really long before people grasp the essence of it, not even thinking about like whether they need it or not. And a few other takeaways. So an acquisition offer came along and it suddenly liberated me that I can maybe move on to something else. And as I was building Tiny Reminder, I was doing the initial onboarding setup for the users, you know, the emails they receive, just seeing who the users are. And I was amazed that there are not so many tools that are doing a great job at that. Essentially, I ended up using Intercom Engage, and it is a very nice product, but the setup was so not pleasant just by the way how I interacted with the product. That I was like, well, why aren't there more products in the market offering that? You know, the way to see who your users are and the way to do like in-app messages and maybe email outreach to them. So when the idea came, when the time came for, you know, new ideas for the new product, I decided to pursue that. And kind of my initial conversations with my founder friends, they kind of showed that there is need for that tool. And then I invited Claire and I invited Benedict. Those were, you know, the first people on my list, and I'm really happy that they say yes. Claire was always like, "You're reading my mind," and I'm like, "Yeah, everyone wants their own SaaS product." <It's great.
laughs> So it's funny. Go ahead. What were you going to say?
No, please, Claire.
You know, we've had conversations back and forth, of course, after you reached out about, you know, what we want, you know, what we want out of user list and so on. But can I ask you, out of my own curiosity, just some follow-up questions on that experience you just described when you were working on Tiny Reminder?
Absolutely. I'm looking forward to questions.
Yeah. Okay, so you mentioned that as you were working on Tiny Reminder, you were considering, like you said, Intercom Engage as the platform for kind of seeing what your users were doing and for outreach to them, for onboarding them. And you mentioned that there was just some frustration there. And I would love to better understand like what was frustrating about it, specifically because this is the pain, of course, that we're trying to solve with user lists. So I'd be interested in what was so frustrating, like in your own words.
My frustration number one, when we launched the beta version, I was like, but how do I see who exactly is using my app now? Like, where is my list mm-hmm. of users? And I got in touch mm-hmm. with Benedict, who was my developer for hire at that time. And he said, well, but we have to build a custom admin board for that. And I'm like, no way, because seriously, it's a very basic need to see who exactly signed up for your app, who are the emails, what are the emails, the names, what did they, like, did they actually complete their first task or something like that. That was the problem number one, even before sending messages came up. So we ended up with Intercom, and I paid like an outrageous amount of money for that software. Because right now I think they come up with a affordable first year
plan, I believe.
Lucrative offering for like $50 per month for everything. At that point, I was paying, I think, $100 per month for their platform, mm-hmm. while I had zero users and zero revenue. And that, I mean, it's definitely not $1,000, but it's definitely not an affordable amount of money. And everyone told me, you don't need Intercom. It's too expensive for your needs. It's too bloated for your needs. But it was the only solution that I could find as a non-coding founder to manage my users.
Mm-hmm. And you said that was not even at the point that messages came into play. It was just trying to understand who your users were and see a list of them.
Right. Right now, I know there is a great tool that does exactly that, which is called Full Story. So I think you should be able to do that in Full Story. But that doesn't in any way integrate with sending messages to these people. And also, Intercom was the only way for me as a non-technical founder to display in-app messages in that chat were actually event-based, not just like from day one or something. So in many ways, Intercom was the only tool I had, and I wasn't happy with the just setup of it.
So at what point, well, I guess we can discuss the rest of it a little bit. We can maybe dive into the rest of it in a bit. But okay, so that was the initial frustration. So then you continued, of course, working on Tiny Reminder, which, as you said, is how we first came into contact. And then toward the end of this year, you started considering the possibility of building the solution for that. And that's when you reached out to first Benedict, am I right, as a co-founder, and then myself?
Yes, I think so, because I wanted to make sure that Benedict was on board, that I invited you, and he was also thrilled. And it's just amazing to have three people on the team, because before, as a solo founder, I had to really pay for every single new feature, and Benedict is an expensive developer, I should say. which is an amazing reality check. Before building anything, you're like, oh, but it's going to cost me like a few $1,000. Maybe I shouldn't really build it right now. And that is
right.
That is good, but at the same time, it's kind of really limiting on your product vision.
Mm-hmm.
And having a marketing co-founder,
so
as
having
I described,
co-founders.
Yeah, a marketing co-founder is just a no-brainer, because not many people are great at marketing at all. And it's just a separate, you know, a huge chunk of work to be done, which we don't always have time to.
Absolutely. I mean, marketing is such a, you can do it very simply and you can do it in a very complex way, but either way, it's a completely different brain space than actually, you know, coming up with the product concept and then working on the product and the design and making sure it actually functions correctly. I mean, the amount of effort involved to try to tackle both just is insane. So,
absolutely.
So I can understand. Yeah. I mean, I can understand how challenging and I'm sure exhausting that was when you were worrying about both for Tiny Reminder.
I should also say that I had a few assumptions that were absolutely not true in the end. I had high hopes that, you know, I will be able to leverage my authority somewhat with a new product. I was like, yeah, but I have a nice audience. Everybody's just going to migrate and use Tiny Reminder. Well, not exactly migrate, but
totally.
Convert somehow. And it was not a huge amount of people. Most of the users were somewhat from the outside, not from the inside. And assumption number two was that it was a client-facing product, and I was hoping for viral growth. And that didn't happen either. So, and authority marketing and, you know, product development are my best qualities. I didn't have anything else up my belt to make it really strong in terms of marketing.
Mm-hmm. And so then it was like, well, now what?
Yeah, I kind of exhausted my low-hanging fruit there, and it was totally at a loss. So having you for the new product is just totally amazing. Thank you for joining us.
I'm so grateful that you reached out when you did. And if you'd like, I mean, I can talk a bit about that experience and share what that looked like from this side. Is that where you'd like me to start? What do you think?
I would love to hear your thoughts, because there, as an authority figure in marketing, you could pursue different paths. You could do info products, and you did a little bit of that. What makes you want to be a co-founder? Because it's a big chore.
Yeah. So you reached out, and of course you didn't know this at the time, but when you reached out, I was right in the middle of thinking through, not just like, oh, what do I want to work on next year? But really, what do I want to build for myself long-term? And you've been in the consulting space longer than I have, of course. But even in the first year, as much as I've enjoyed the client work that I've done, and I've had some really, I got to work with Wistia on a really fun client research project. I was able to work with Meet Edgar on a really fun client research project, Death to the Stock Photo. I mean, the people I've worked with have been fantastic. So it's not that I've had, you know, nightmare clients this year, but I have very quickly become aware of just, you know, that whole idea of like the client treadmill, and the reality of it. And of course, you know, if you do client work, then you constantly have to be taking on more clients, in order to keep your revenue steady. Or if you don't want to continually work with client after client, you need to, bring on someone to take on that client work on your behalf. And you essentially become like the business manager or a salesperson of some kind. And I knew that I've really never had an interest in starting, you know, an agency, whether large or small. And I have had an interest in building products that scale beyond me, right? And that don't require my one-on-one attention, to every single customer. So like you said, that can be done with info products. And I have experimented with that. And I am running multiple projects right now, one of which is more information oriented. But SaaS, just because I've already worked in it, has always been interesting as well. What's kept me from ever exploring starting my own SaaS company is just the overwhelm, like you said, of the development process. Because to find a good co-founder and to find a good technical co-founder is very challenging. And to pay for a developer is very expensive. As you just said, that's quite limiting. So, you know, I ruled out SaaS because I was like, no pain to me has shown up in my life that's so great that I want to save money and hire a technical co-founder to fix it. Or that I want to find a consultant to fix or hire a technical co-founder for. That just seems so unattainable. And so, when you reached out and said, hey, I experienced this problem when I was working on Tiny Reminder. And I know that plenty of people in the self-funded founder space also struggle with this. And I've got a wonderful technical co-founder. I just thought, oh my goodness, she just checked off all the boxes that I haven't been able to check off myself. And it was just so, as you mentioned earlier, it just felt like we were on the same page, in that we could sense that this was a true problem. And beyond that, you know, I was so interested in what you wanted UserList to become as a company. There are, of course, multiple ways to run a SaaS business. So you can self-fund it, and it can be very lean, and it can also be something that grows really large and you take funding for, and it becomes this big company and you're constantly raising money, or anywhere within that spectrum. And so, my first call with you, I was very interested in just, what are your values for this company, and What do you want working on it to look like in a year and in 3 years, five, and so on? And your vision and mine and Benedict's were all so aligned, which just seemed incredibly rare. And also, you know, we all take great pride in the type of work we do that we can bring to the table. So not only did I see how relevant and real the problem is, I also saw us fitting really well together as co-founders, which I think can be just as big of a challenge as choosing a good problem to solve on its own. So I was excited about coming on board for both of those reasons. And it just seemed like too rare of an opportunity where all those stars aligned to pass up, if that makes sense.
Absolutely. I would like to add that we did like a few levels of check to make sure that we mean the same thing when we're engaging into this big new enterprise. Mm-hmm. First, we had that initial call when we had, you know, we aligned high level priorities. Because, like, we are pretty lucky to be coming from one ecosystem, and we kind of do have the same, you know, mind model of a bootstrap SaaS that could be grown better. But in addition to that first call, we also had that brand sprint exercise, which I'd love you to elaborate on, when we did more thinking about our long-term goals, our positioning, what's going to happen to the company in 5 or 10 years.
Yeah. And that topic is extra fun because I'm considering, as you know, I'm considering speaking on that at FemtoComp in March. So there's an exercise that Google Ventures has termed the brand sprint. So essentially, you know, branding so often is kind of looked at as this fuzzy exercise, and it gets ignored in the early days because it seems like a nice to have, not a necessary to have, type of exercise. And Google Ventures brand sprint, is essentially a way to come up with some brand guidelines. Any, you know, SaaS company can do this no matter how large or small their team is. And it's a way to nail down the most important pieces of your brand in about 3 hours. And I think everyone who plays an important role in your team can make time for 3 hours of a meeting together. So yeah, you and Benedict and I met for our 3 hour brand sprint, in the earliest days of us working together. And before we discussed anything, related to the product, we started with what do the three of us as a company and as co-founders really care about, right? So what's the real like why behind starting user list, right? What drives us to get out of bed and work on this every day or however many days a week we can work on it? and that really, I found that exercise, I'd love to hear, you know, what you found valuable about it. But that really solidified for me that we all share the same vision, which is that we want to make the bootstrapping process easier for, we want to make the SaaS building product process easier for self-funded founders. And we want to do so in a way that is sustainable, right? So none of the three of us are interested in, you know, raising a round of money to build this thing really quickly. We'd rather build it slowly and be very thoughtful about the product decisions we make, and build something that, you know, maybe a bit more niche and like you said, not as feature rich as some of the other solutions on the market. Because we want it to sustain the three of us and at some point, maybe a couple of other people, but none of us have aspirations of building some like, you know, 2000 person company or making this a giant. It's something that we want to solve a real problem, but we also want to fit into like our own ways of life, if that makes any sense. So the doing the brand sprint really helped us solidify that and kind of write it down so we have it stored somewhere. And then it also gave us some early guidelines for describing the problem we solve and also coming up with kind of the things that we value as a company. And I can pull up the brand guidelines if you want me to read some of those off. But you know, I'd love your thoughts too on what you found like valuable about that exercise.
Interesting. I have not looked at the output of it for a while, and what comes as most memorable is us extrapolating, you know, about the future of the company for, you know, the next 5, 10, 15 years, because it was just so memorable to to fantasize that far in the future. But it's good to hear that we kind of aligned on most of the answers. What we did, we actually did homework for every answer on your questionnaire, and then we compared our answers, and it was amazing to hear that our answers were very close or complementing each other in most of the questions, especially as you mentioned about building good tools for founders from day one. Affordable, simple, pragmatic, not too fancy, not too playful, just the right tools. And also about the funding, that we want to have organic growth, slowly outsource our time to other people, but still be at the steering wheel of the company for many years to come, right?
Right. I think that's a really helpful exercise for anyone who is considering coming in at an early stage in a SaaS company. I mean, especially if you plan to be a co-founder with someone, it really, the earlier you can do it, the better sense you'll get of whether you're truly aligned with the other, you know, stakeholders. And if you're not, maybe, you know, maybe that will give you some clarity on whether it's the right decision, or it'll spark some really good discussions with your co-founders so that you can all be better aligned and have a clearer idea, shared idea of what you're working toward. So I find it very valuable.
And even if you're a solo founder, it's still super useful to sit down and answer those questions to yourself, because we usually have a very like small, bright vision.
Right.
There is so
like
much
short-term.
More to it, right? yeah. And I understand why, because you never know exactly how it's going to go, if it's going to launch fast, you know, if it's going to gain traction quickly or slowly. But still, thinking of how it could go is a big exercise.
Yeah. And so that, I think, was step one, and it made me very confident in moving forward. And then I guess as we began to touch on at some point, step two was actually doing some customer research, right? Or pre-customer research.
That's a big one. That's a big one. Absolutely. Claire did an amazing job of that. So what we did, mostly me, also Benedict, we all have a network of our friends. A lot of them are founders, and I reached out to them and booked Claire's time for November out using her calendar link.
Yeah.
So Claire didn't have to do a lot of this sort of prep work. So Claire's got her calendar booked for November straight. I think you had like, how many interviews did you have in the end?
There were some no-shows, so they didn't all get completed, but I had at least, I think, 20 interviews booked for the month of November. So every single Tuesday, it was just, I was just awake, and then I was on the phone all day.
Right, right. So getting on the phone with the potential, you know, audience is it's pretty scary for most founders. We are very lucky that Claire actually enjoys doing those jobs to be done interviews, right?
Yes, interviewing. I have come to realize is not something that everyone likes doing. So I was happy that I could contribute that. Because I do have quite a lot of my background is in interviewing people and pulling out those insights.
So can you please, go into a little bit of detail? What exactly, did you ask people, during those interviews? What was your thought process? It did follow the jobs to be done methodology, right?
Yes. For anyone who's listening and haven't, I know you and I have briefly talked about jobs to be done, Jane, and you also had a wonderful podcast episode. I can't remember the guest, diving further into the jobs to be done concept. So for anyone who hasn't listened to those, jobs to be done is a theory that believes, and of course this may sound like common sense, but people buy a product not because they really care about that product or that brand, but because they're trying to make their own self or their own life better in some way. And so my goal in these interviews was uncovering what led our target market, like you said, that's self-funded SaaS founders, what led those people to choose what you could, I guess, consider user list competitors. And I say that with quotation marks because there are a couple of different things that people currently do to view their list of users and then send communications. So that could be anything from, like you said, building a custom admin panel. And it could be something along the lines of using Intercom. It could be using Drip, which I've come to learn, you know, many self-funded founders use Drip for both their marketing emails and their onboarding emails. It could be using an analytics tool like Heap or Mixpanel or something to understand user activity and then meshing that with some kind of communication tool. There's all kinds of different competing solutions, so to speak, even if it's not just this product versus user list. It's often like a combination of a couple of things. But my goal in these interviews was to understand what led people to choose those other solutions, right? How were they looking to make their life better or their product better? And then once they were in it, what wasn't working, right? So what were the real pain points that people experienced that we could solve with UserList? So I was trying to go into it, not getting people's opinion, like, do you like Intercom or do you like using XYZ? But instead my thought process was, you know, tell me what you're using. So I'll say Intercom just, so we can choose one in this example. But instead the interviews were much more along the lines of, so you're using Intercom. So let's go back to the point in time when you were working on your product and you chose Intercom. Tell me about that, right? So tell me about the different solutions you considered and why you decided not to go with MailChimp or why you decided not to go with Drip. And what did you like and not like about each one? And what eventually made you say, okay, Intercom is going to work for us? And now that you're in Intercom, what is working well? What are the pros? And then also what's still really painful at this point? You know, are there new problems that have popped up, or are there some problems that you thought Intercom was going to solve that it never actually solved for you? And what are those? So that was the model. And I do have a list of about 25 questions that I use when I conduct these interviews. I never, ever get through the whole list of questions because that would be a very robotic type of interview. But they at least serve to kind of keep myself and the interviewee on track. So if we start to kind of get into the weeds or get into a tangent, I can keep us focused. I have those actually packaged up on my Love Your Customers website. And Jane, if it's helpful, I can share the link to that if anyone wants those. Okay.
Yeah. We can absolutely do that.
Sure. So I can share the link to that in the show notes. But I used that set of questions to go through these interviews. So what I could create from those was this idea of a set of stories. So basically, if you interview 15 to 20 people and you ask them about the story of building their product, choosing a way to view and communicate with their users and learning what works and doesn't work for them, you have 15 to 20 different stories that you can start comparing. And if you put those all next to each other, you can start to see where the patterns are. So you can see what the most common pain points are with every competing solution, as well as what people like about those solutions, because that's, of course, very important too. So I created this hideous spreadsheet. It's awful. By the way, yeah,
it's just big.
and you know, spreadsheets weren't really made for organizing data. They were made for calculations. I've heard good things about Airtable and some other solutions, but I haven't found anything that I love yet. So if you're working on a replacement for Google Sheets, let me know. But I made this big spreadsheet, and in it, oh my goodness, it's like, I think four sheets. I think it's four. There's four different tabs in it. But in it are a couple different columns. So there are the struggling moments that each of the interviewees felt when they were looking for a solution, like Intercom, for example, or Drip or custom building an admin panel. right? So what struggle led them to start looking for that solution? And then I've got a column for their experience. You know, what different solutions did they try and what worked or didn't about every single one? And then there's also a column for the expected outcome. So what was it that they were trying to accomplish? And then did that work or did it not work? So I've got a huge spreadsheet with all this information in it. And that helped us identify which problems were the most common and which problems were most aligned to the problem we want to solve with UserList. So that really, we did find quite a couple of people do feel the pain that Jane experienced with Tiny Reminder, which was validation that the problem we're solving, which is viewing your user behavior and then communicating based on that, is something people definitely are trying to do and still not finding a perfect solution for. And that also helped us rule out the people who didn't feel those problems, right? So we could focus on just the people who felt the pain, and then we could focus specifically on what solutions they currently use to solve that problem. And then we could compare and contrast, okay, how can we improve upon what already exists out there? So it was a huge project that both informed the early concept of what we want to build with UserList, and then it also helped us understand how people describe these problems out in the wild. So messaging and positioning and website copy are not typically founders' favorite activities. So this was a nice shortcut in getting those things started. So there was very little writing, you know, coming up with a way to describe the problem from scratch. We could just pull from this spreadsheet and describe the problems in the ways that people already talk about them. I could keep discussing this and telling more about the spreadsheet, but do you want to take time to interject or share anything that I'm missing, Jane?
Could you walk through for people who are not, you know, who don't do customer interviews on a daily basis, what was your technology stack for doing that? So for scheduling, we used Calendly. Then what did you exactly do with those people?
Yeah, absolutely. So I do use Calendly to schedule meetings, especially like interviews, where the other person, where you're trying to connect, you're trying to get 20 people on your calendar. And the way I've set up Calendly is I have an appointment type. It's like a 30 or 40 minute meeting. And when people book that, I have Calendly set up so that the invitee who just picked a time immediately is sent an event invitation from my Google Calendar. And then inside that Google Calendar invitation in the location field, I have the link to, I have a Zoom link. So I use Zoom for the majority of my meetings. Skype is of course a popular choice. But what I like about Zoom is, there's native recording. And I find it extremely important to record all of these interviews. So the person automatically has the Zoom link where they will appear on the day of the interview. I do ask for people's Skype or phone details as backup, but that I rarely have to use that. So the day of the meeting, they open the calendar event, they click on the Zoom link, and then we're both in our little Zoom room or Zoom meeting, and we're ready to begin. So when I open up Zoom, I have my list of questions open. And before I just dive into questions, of course, we spend a few minutes saying hi and getting to know a little bit about each other. And I share some context for what the interview is going to be about. And I explain, you know, this is less about me telling you what features we're thinking about and getting your feedback. And it's more just about me understanding the process of working on whatever product they're building. You know, I'm trying to understand the pain points in there, and I'm trying to understand what led you to choose some of the different tools in your stack. So once I kind of get a sense that they feel comfortable and they're ready to move forward, we start with those interview questions again, which are much less about people's opinions. And they're much more about kind of creating a timeline of their decision-making process. And in this case, of course, it's what tools are they using to communicate with their users. And as we're going, again, I'm recording that meeting because I don't want to be trying to write down notes and missing important things they're saying. It's also very valuable to have those recordings for future reference. So if we ever want to listen to those interviews again, we can do so. Or more often the case, if we want to refer back to the transcripts, we can do so. So as soon as a call is complete, I upload the recording. I upload the file to rev.com. And oh my gosh, Rev gets so much of my business. I pay them so much money. So rev.com is a transcription service, and it's $1 USD per minute of an audio file or video file, but that's a small detail. The turnaround time is incredibly quick. It's usually in 24 hours, sometimes far less. Sometimes they'll return a transcript within, say, 8 hours. And they're very accurate, even though for these interviews, for example, we're using very, very industry related terms. So SaaS, for example, is a very unique to the industry term. There's all kinds of technical terms that are being discussed in the interviews, and Rev is pretty good at picking up most of them. You know, sometimes there's the person who transcribed it will get a word wrong, but overall I find the transcripts to be about 95% accurate, which is fantastic. So then I've got this set of, you know, 15 to 20 transcripts by the end of the month. And it's all these different people in our target market describing those stories of how they chose different solutions and why. So from those transcripts, which I just keep in a Google Drive folder so that my co-founders have access to them as well, I start to highlight the key pieces of their stories. And I will look, I will set up my Google spreadsheet, with each of those columns, there's a column for every important piece of someone's story, and I will start to highlight the key information in the transcripts. So once I'm finished highlighting that information, I can copy and paste all the important pieces into the spreadsheet, close down all the transcripts, and then I have all the most important info in this one big spreadsheet. Now it's a ton of text. It is a ton. As you said, Jane, it's a really big spreadsheet. It's not very pretty, and it's very, very dense. I have, you know, some systems for making the information easier to read. But I believe what I did was I tried to pull out for you and Benedict the key themes into, I don't know if it was a PDF or maybe it was just a different tab in the spreadsheet. I tried to make the most important points a little bit easier for you to understand. But really what that whole process does is takes qualitative data, right? It takes raw conversations with people that you want to create a product for, and it organizes the information you learn from them in a way that is still not beautiful, but it at least is something that can help you build a product that is solving real pain points instead of solving a problem that maybe you think people have, but you didn't go do the research to find out if they really have it. Maybe it's just you and a very small pool of people who you're trying to solve for. So I can deep dive into any of those pieces if you like, Jane. But that's a bit of an overview of what that looks like. And, you know, I'm going through this in a couple of minutes. But again, this was a process that it was a month to complete the calls and then probably another month to distill the information, I would say.
Absolutely. And not only you had, you know, that first giant spreadsheet, but you also created a few other structured spreadsheets that, for example, for me, they were even more helpful, much more helpful. So one of them was the job stories by founder. And the other was, which is my absolute favorite, is the competitor solutions with pros and cons outlined specifically in the word of the people. Mm-hmm. So the last one I use, like, I don't know, like a Bible during product design and the UX phase, because
which I'm so happy
I would
about.
Just go, for example, you have a table, it has MailChimp, Drip, Intercom, Mixpanel, Customer.io outlined. So I would go do my own product research with those solutions, figure out what I think about them and read what people think about them. And that just results in the perfect in the perfect workflow for me. And then I can go actually design specific features based on what people say. And it's just downright amazing. This is the first time in my life I've ever had something that specific, actually.
Yay! what's also so nice about organizing it in that order, right? So as you said, the first thing I did was organize all of the feedback, by founder. So, and when I say by founder, I should clarify what I mean is by interviewee. So by the founders out there that we want to serve. What that did was help me identify, okay, this person running this company, they don't really feel the problem that we're trying to solve. So I'm going to kind of cross them out, and we shouldn't take them into account when we're doing product development. These three people feel the pain really, really badly. So we should really focus on what they have to say. So not immediately, but early on, I had an idea of which people we should pay the most attention to as we work on this. And only from those people did I take the pros and the cons of their existing solutions. So it's not that we have a big random table of people's feedback on different products. It's that we have a very focused table of feedback on these existing products from the people that we actually want to serve. So that's a bit of insight into why I did it in that order, and why I waited until, like you said, this is pretty deep in that spreadsheet. I think it's like the third or fourth tab. That's a bit of why I waited, to list out the pros and cons of existing solutions until the end. I wanted to make sure we were only taking into account the feedback from people that we truly want to serve.
Right. Because even when you schedule, for example, 20 interviews, we're looking for founders at a certain stage, for example, there is still some stratification between those people. Some of them are, you know, farther ahead, someone are at the specifically early growth stage who we want to target, for example, with our first pricing tier, and so on and so forth. And I actually didn't know that you only put into the relevant interviews into the last smallest table.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, you know, as you mentioned, we interviewed people in all different stages of building their products. So some people, you know, they were still working on getting their first users. Other people had their first 10. Other people, their product had been, you know, generating revenue for them for over a year. So we had a very wide range of people to speak to. And I thought it was so interesting. One thing I found very interesting is that some people, the folks who really didn't feel the problem that we're trying to solve, that problem being monitoring your users, seeing what they do, and then sending automatic communications. Some people were at a point at which they weren't ready to automate those communications. You know, they were so early in building their solution that they wanted to get on a phone call with every single customer or every single user who signed up, and they wanted to handhold that person and, you know, wait before automating the communication process, which is not something I had anticipated. And again, I think a big part of that comes from my prior experience being with Calendly. My experience was with a product that's so transactional, right? It's a low cost tool. It's not something that the average person needs any help setting up, beyond a knowledge base. And so I was surprised to hear a number of bootstrap founders say, we're not ready to automate communications. We still want to get on these onboarding calls, and we still want to get on customer support calls. I found that really surprising.
Yeah, because for example, there are some founders like myself, my primary goal is to think of everything as automated from day one, because ultimately my goal is freedom from being on the phone. Why would I really enjoy those high touch communications when my goal is to free myself from them? Even though I do understand they must be loaded with customer insights, but still, like, if I can avoid it, I will do so at all costs.
Right. I thought that was extremely interesting. All kinds of really cool insights. And, you know, we can discuss this or that insight, but I don't know if that's getting too far in the weeds.
I'd like to mention that we not only we transcribed customer interviews, but also we transcribed podcast episode where Amy Hoy was complaining really hard about some existing products, which was like also a huge treasure chest of insights for us in terms of product building.
Yeah, we could link to that podcast. It's just an audio file on SoundCloud, but it was so funny. I was on a call with Jason at Rigbooks, and I was describing the pain you felt, Jane, when you were working on Tiny Reminder. And Jason seemed to very much be in the category that we're trying to solve for, right? So he understands the pain point, and he said, you know, Amy Hoy posted a podcast about this like yesterday. It was on Twitter. Have you seen that yet? I was like, oh, no, I'll go find it. And yeah, she, in her, really, it's more of a rant than anything. Like you said, it's just her complaining about existing solutions, but it was a goldmine, like you said. You know, as she works on Sweep, her new SaaS product, she wants to see how are people using Sweep, and not in a way like she doesn't want to set up any kind of onboarding funnel, right? She's not ready to say, okay, all Sweep users need to take step one and then two and then three. She's still trying to just understand how do people use it and which of those people end up paying. And then once we figure out who's paying, let's go use their process as the way to guide all of our other users through. So she's also not at a communication point quite yet. And she was voicing so much frustration, with the current analytics tools out there, because, and I mean, we can discuss tags as the current example or the current solution, but she's not finding anything that allows her to really understand what users do. Because she wants to see that first, and then she wants to build communications to her users in a way that guides them through the most successful path. But right now, she doesn't even know what the path is. So I thought that was, I was grateful that she, you know, put that out on the internet, and we didn't even have to get on the phone. There was just an audio file waiting for me.
Right.
Thanks, Amy.
Right. So there were a lot of interesting insights, but as I mentioned, we used that a lot with Benedict, because ultimately it was me and Benedict discussing what exactly is that we're going to build for the MVP. Like, what is the fastest way to solve problems that we discovered during the interviews? And also your smallest table with constant pros of the product was hugely helpful when I actually got down to designing the features in Sketch and putting together actual screens, like what people actually look for in those.
Right. And we discussed this recently. I'm very happy with the direction the product's already moving in as far as design. As the head of design, I will default to you. You're the expert here. But we have been sharing some of those designs out on social media just so that people can get a preview. And it's been really fun watching, you know, initial feedback come in and initial intrigue come in.
Absolutely. And it's not hard at all, because the worst thing you can do for your product is to build it secretly in silence and never tell anyone.
Right.
We are hopefully doing the opposite, and it's not hard at all. It's actually very enjoyable.
Yeah, I would agree. And whether it's the things you post, or, you know, Benedict is really kind of live tweeting his development logic. Some pieces of the spreadsheet, I'd like to share. I just want to make sure that, you know, confidential information is saved. I guess it makes sense, right? I mean, if we want to serve a community of makers, then of course they're interested in how it's made.
Absolutely. So just to finalize today's long episode, for the MVP, we chose the two primary things that we can implement. And one is the actual user list that we can look into with real names and seeing what people do. Like, if they started a new project, if they started five new projects, when and in which sequence they did so. That's like feature set number one, very, very narrow and very concise. And the second feature is sending relevant email messages to them based on what they do. That is event-based email. Among, you know, the runner-ups were were in-app messaging, but we decided to postpone that until maybe next iterations. Maybe we will stop at email, or maybe we will pursue multiple channels. But for MVP, we chose the user list activities and the email sending.
Correct. And we also, this is one final, I would say, learning from our research. I found it interesting that multiple folks that we spoke with said, you know, I wanted to see what my users were doing, and I wanted to send them email communication, but it all just felt so overwhelming. And coming from the marketing side, you know, I hadn't realized that just figuring out what to put in those emails is such a challenge. You know, what is the right way? What is the best way to really engage with your users when they're in your product? And so we have had conversations, in addition to, you know, developing that functionality within the product, we've also had conversations about creating some content that helps our users or founders out there figure out how the best way to engage with their users is. What does that look like? How do you craft a good email sequence to your customer base or your trial users and so on? So that's also coming up in the plans.
Absolutely. That's a whole, you know, another topic for our discussion here, because it feels like as of today, software users are totally tired of getting bombarded with, you know, long daily sequences when you join a product. And there should be some alternative. So the alternative should be sending less messages at better times. And I hope we will be able to figure out the best way of do that.
And it's so custom for, you know, what your product is and what the adoption process looks like. But hopefully we can come up with some best practices to make that easier for people.
Absolutely. There is a long, interesting journey ahead.
True story.
All right. Claire, thank you so much for finding time today to share your insights. I hope that people who are starting new products these days will, you know, will borrow some of our experience. And I hope we talk again maybe sometime later about the actual product building.
Yeah, I'm looking very forward to that too. This was so much fun. I'm glad to share some of this process, you know, with the UI Breakfast audience. So yeah, we will talk again very soon.
One more question. Where can people find you personally and your work online in case they want to connect with you specifically?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, because we're talking about it, signing up for the waitlist for user list is the best,
right.
The best option. And that's, of course, that will be linked in the show notes, but userlist.io is where we live for that project. Personally, my own domain is loveyourcustomers.co. And if you sign up for my email list there, you'll hear from me every once in a while. I try to be sparse with the emails I send through there so I don't bombard people. Speaking of that, but you can interact with me there and everything that that you may reply to coming from my email address there actually goes to my inbox. So that's another great way to get in touch.
Wonderful. Thank you once again for your time, Claire, and have a great day.
You too.
If you enjoyed listening to this episode, please leave a review on iTunes. It will help other people discover this podcast.